Hello and welcome to Hockey Development Talk. Today I'm at Loughborough University with Brett Holland and Andy Gibson. Hello, gents.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So we're going to touch on the student hockey world, and I'm going to hopefully break it down so the listeners can understand just how this works here at Loughborough on the women's side. So I'll just leave it open to you two, as normal for my podcast, just to who you are and a little bit of background about yourselves. So I'll start with Brett as he's looking at me.
So I'm Brett. My role here at the university is performance head coach on the women's side. So in essence, looking at probably the top 30 players or so here at the university. I have a few kind of wider interactions with the club, but essentially that's what I'm getting paid to do. And again, I have an equivalent on the men's side. That's pretty much my role here. Mr. Gibson?
Yeah, my role at Loughborough is I'm the assistant in the Ladies Performance Programme with Brett, assistant coach, and I lead the development programme, which sits below performance. As Brett says, sort of the top 30 players is to touch sort of the next 30, and that involves a coach development programme for student coaches as well.
Okay, so Brett, full-time role here? Yeah.
Yeah, full-time in a bit.
Full-time. There's always a bit more. Andy, yourself?
Not full-time here.
No.
Do some other bits and pieces as well in coach development. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Background. We'll start with you, Mr. Gibson. Do you want to give the listeners a little bit of background about yourself?
So coaching. Started coaching in schools. Head of hockey at Cheltenham last year. Coached at Queen Elizabeth Grammar and Wakefield Girls High in a previous life before that. In between there, worked in sport development and always pretty consistently coached around clubs. So my home club's Doncaster, coached ladies first team there for 3 seasons, played there, coached the juniors there, and currently involved with Brooklyn's men's still. So helping a good friend out who's coaching there this year in Paul Gannon. So involved there.
Good name check.
I just left it blank. And doing some coach development work for Hockey Wales in the North Aspiring 360 centres.
Okay. At the moment, yeah. Cool. So good background to different forms of club hockey, which is always good to sort of come back to. Great. Brett, yourself?
Similar, quite a varied diet, I think, to get myself here to where I am. So left university, went straight into teaching, worked, and that's actually how we first met, Gary.
It is indeed.
In the FE sector, and then took on the role as head of hockey at the school, the college I was at. So half teaching, half coaching. Quite a pivotal moment for me is when I went abroad, and I went to teach abroad for a year, but also picked up a junior hockey development officer role within the club. And even though I love teaching, love being in that environment, I just love being outside and teaching hockey, essentially. So when I came back to the UK 4 or so years later, I got a few jobs in schools and started coaching more, did some coach development work, which eventually has led me into the role that I'm in now.
Excellent. The stuff abroad, did that shape you differently to the way that you sort of focused on things now? Your approach to things, did that change the way that you...
Yeah, to some extent. So it was Australia that I was in. And obviously Australia being such a force in hockey, it was kind of like, these guys must be doing something really special. Mm-hmm. And they do some really good things, but what I took away was just the intensity at which they do things. So regardless what the game was or the drill or whatever, it was like, we're doing this 100%.
Yeah.
And I'm doing it individually 100%, but actually everyone around me is going to make sure that I do it 100%. And if I don't, I get told quite directly that was the case. And that kind of just... fire that had been to training was I guess quite pivotal how they go about things, and also where that success has taken to internationally. Mm-hmm. Again, unbelievably great hockey players, but just the intensity they play at is just relentless.
Yeah.
And you see it when you watch them play.
Cool. Andy, anything that's popped up along your journey that's maybe changed?
Less exciting, I've not done any coaching abroad. I coached in America for summers, and that was fun. That was in my early 20s. But so the different environments I've been at, really enjoyed last year at Cheltenham with the different sports. Lots of good heads of sport there, excellent coaching, rugby, cricket, football, netball. So really good interactions there. So a lot of cross-sport learning, did some good observations and the daily conversations were good. That was an excellent environment to be in day to day. And then the last couple of clubs I've been involved in, with Alderley Edge on the ladies' side and Brooklands on the men's side. Again, great coaches there, doing really good things. And you know, particularly the Brooklands men's stuff is has stretched me as a coach. It's high, you know, reasonably high stakes in the Premier League. You have to be quite accountable, and things are done to a good standard. And so that's certainly a recent learning experience that's been pretty significant. And before that, you know, my old club.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
You know, family run club, and it still retains that. I'm doing a variety of roles there. I think, you know, it's good exposure for me as a younger coach. I say younger, I'm getting on now.
You're not getting on. Okay, so that gives us a little bit of background what you did before here. How did you end up here then? Brett, do you want to talk us through that? How did you sort of arrive?
Yeah, great question. So, doing quite a lot of work, similar to Andy, actually a lot of different things, lots of implies, lots of different things, pieces. The main crux of what I was doing was at a school, coaching relatively heavily there. And then opportunity came up at Loughborough, so I was like, well, I'd like to get involved in a little bit more of that. So I ended up doing the long journeys from where I was working to here and then home and this piece. I thought it's a good environment to be. It's going to open my eyes to certain different things, give me the opportunity to develop myself as a coach as well. That role then progressed, and actually I had the role that Andy's got now to deliver a programme to essentially the second team and support under the performance umbrella that we have. But then also do a coach development programme with the students here too. It then took me into an office role here at Loughborough, and my role grew, and then opportunity came up to lead the programme, which I went for, and thankfully got the role. I do love being here. It's a very different world, a very fast-paced world, but it's one I'm pleased to be within.
Yeah, I can't remember the terminology you used on the Talent Equation podcast, but you said it was not a roller coaster, but you... Yeah.
So that was Stuart's words. The Disneyland.
The Disneyland,
It is to some extent as well, in different kind of guises. But yeah, it's fast paced, which I think is brilliant. Keeps me on my toes, and there's just so many different things you can do. Again, one of the fantastic things working here, I think we still only scratch the surface. So many other bits that we have opportunities to kind of develop and do more of. I'm sure we'll touch on it in a bit of detail in a second, but using the resources the university have, so we've got more and more interns that are coming to work with us. We're pulling resources from here and there to ultimately just develop the experience that the players are getting.
After a small hiccup in recording, we're now back with Andy and Brett, and we can continue the discussion. Okay, Andy, do you want to talk us through how you're here?
Series of conversations with Brett, I suppose, over a number of months around the role, and just an overall desire to be involved in a programme as comprehensive as this that had lots of different opportunities. So to coach at performance end, something I wanted to do, a lot of, opportunities for coach development and opportunities for varied different coaching. So, having an impact further down the club and stuff is still exciting, it's still very big part of the role, but yeah, just a series of conversations with Brett and around being in a programme as comprehensive as this is something that really appealed to me. So in a previous life I'd have never been sat down with physios, sports psychs, analysts, that kind of thing. So just understanding and having more exposure to the disciplines around performance sport, it's an experience I've not had, and you know, it's something I definitely really wanted to do in my coaching. So that was the attraction of being here. And, you know, you have a reasonable knowledge of Loughborough when you're at a place 6 miles down the road, you know what they offer, you know what they're all about. So, yeah, it was always a place in the front of your mind. I think that's a place that delivers hockey really well. So an opportunity to go and be a part of it was something I really wanted to do.
Cool. And you both actually mentioned there a little bit around that it's not just the hockey stuff. So, you know, you've mentioned there about the psychology bit, the rehab and stuff like that. And that's what people on the outside think about Loughborough. You know, they just see this elite bit. But from the discussions that we've had and stuff like that, we know that it's not. There's a whole bigger structure. So do you want to talk to me around that, what it is, and we can go in and have a chat? Because it really isn't just around the elite. And that's why this podcast for me is quite fascinating. I think it shows Loughborough in a different light.
Yeah, I guess... ultimately, what it boils down to is we're going to get people in at 18, 19 years old, predominantly, and sadly then have to leave at 20, 21, 22, and 23. And actually just developing that person and on what could be one of the biggest transitions of their lives.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've all been to university, and like, we know that kind of experience, what you went in and then what you came out as, probably two very different people or places, that kind of stuff. So that's ultimately what's driving everything that we do. In terms of the structure of the ladies section, which is the same on the men's, we have five teams that compete both in the university league on a Wednesday, but also in the weekend league as well, which presents some challenges but also some great opportunities. Below that we have an intramural sport programme. The brilliant thing about that is the students run that completely.
Mm-hmm.
So they do the admin, they run the games, they umpire, they coach, they do everything. We also have a level of sport just below that, because recreational sport, so mm-hmm. someone to Harman Ashturf, they've got that, and other bits and pieces. So I get biased because I'm being paid by Loughborough to sit here and talk to you, Gary. But they do sport well, and the sport is synonymous with everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
Internationally renowned for what we're providing, and hockey is no different. We're trying to push push everyone, but we have a performance program which caters to people that are playing at a high level. But we try and have everything there for anyone who wants to give sport a go and play at all the different levels. So it's a good place to be for that.
No, it's good. I think the bit that's really fascinates me more than anything is obviously you've got your elite section, but then this participation section here and the development that you did do, and obviously now Andy does, with that developing students to be able to run the training, the teams, you know, the management side of that. That fascinates me, in the fact of where we are, you know, developing those individuals to be able to support clubs. So once they've left here, they could go do exactly the same in a hockey club somewhere else. And we should be massively grasping that as a sport and saying, by the way, you've just left Loughborough, you've now gone to X club. You do realise that they've not only delivered training, but they've supported this team. They've they've been a great volunteer here. They could probably do that for you if they wanted to, if they have the time to. And I'm sure other universities do the same, but we can only talk about what we're here now. So Andy, do you want to just explain how that actually works?
Yeah, so a lot of the girls that would be in performance, there's four, they volunteer and coach the development programme.
Mm-hmm. Which is teams?
Twos and threes, basically. Pretty much all the third team are in it, and around half the second team are in it, and the other half would be in performance. But we're quite flexible with call-ups to training and stuff like that, so people do move between the groups. We try and get sort of 20 to 4 at each session, sort of thing, or 24 at development, 20 at performance. So we're quite flexible around that. But there's four girls in the performance squad and first team that train, that coach in development, and there's two men's performance players that coach in development that are all doing a great job. I suppose the journey that they're going on is around just being session to session coaches, and then becoming around running sides and having a longer term view of things. So the guys that work with the threes are certainly making loads of progress there. They're thinking around how the team plays, and it's not just putting on practices, it's there's a why, and some nice outcomes this year, I suppose, like Nick Page, who's coaching the ladies twos and in the development. His coaching's coming on really well, and he's actually working in a school now. So he's got, I'm not saying it's because he's coaching in development or anything like that. We've done such a wonderful job. He's an independent guy, he can kind of use anything. But, he's interested in his coaching, and giving him opportunities to do that and work with him is, certainly quite a rewarding thing. And then there's girls that are in the performance that coach further down the ladies' club as well. So people like Sean, who plays in the development training group, coaches the fours, and it's quite a good cascade down the club around performance training. Looks a little bit like development training, the similar principles, similar language that gets filtered into threes, fours, and actually there's a way of working, and not so much a definite way of playing, but some shared principles which are quite useful.
That's good.
Just to jump in on that, so again, having a bit of an idea of how it works, having done the role in this piece as well, just giving these students the opportunity to do it with the guidance and the nudges is brilliant.
Yeah.
And one thing that sticks into my head, we've done fairly recently, had a big review at Christmas about I think you had three or four questions that you put on the board and kind of gave me the opportunity to write, how's it going, what are you going to keep, what are we going to stop, etc. And some of the discussions they were having were brilliant. And the ability for, and so Andy and I were in the room, we also had a coach developer that we got in for the day as well to kind of give his thoughts on bits and pieces, to talk so openly, honestly, articulately on what they're physically doing. I was pretty blown away, to be honest, it was so good. And those conversations they're going to take, or the experience of those conversations they're going to take into other realms, and I'm sure they're going to impress other people going forward. So that level of just the detail and obviously the motivation and passion they've got to deliver on that is brilliant. And these are life skills.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything that you could pick out, anything from that that you can remember that sticks in there that one brought up?
Yeah, so there's always challenges around. We have so many great players, which sounds like a good problem to have, but it is genuinely hard. There's so many players who could be playing at higher levels, but just the amount of players we have, I guess the ability of the players to kind of challenge and push back and say, okay, well, is it going the way you say it's going? And actually to challenge what myself and Andy are running, I would thought that's good. That's the really openness that we really want. And again, one of the comments that true name drop.
Yeah.
Oh, so we got Mark Bateman in as our coach developer, and one of his first reactions was exactly that. Actually, the openness and honesty to say as they saw it, in a very kind of proactive, solution focused manner. It wasn't like a calling out and this is horrible, this I need to point a finger at you. It's actually, well, is this going the way it should be going? Which again is only going to prompt better discussions and actually ensure that we are doing things with the right integrity, which. Hopefully we come to the conclusion that we are.
Yeah, that's it's pretty cool, isn't it? I mean,
it's brilliant. You
know, Mark as well to come in and give some time on that is great. You know, within his role, not just within with the hockey, but also with UK coaching and be able to do that sort of development. You know, those students are going to learn so much from the program, and I think that's something that people on the outside probably don't realise is happening here. They just see this elite hockey, first team, men's, ladies, second team.
What must be sort of said is that what we can offer is what we can offer across Brett and I and getting external people in and other things like that. But well, none of it would really count for much if the students that are actually engaged don't approach it in the way that they do.
Yeah.
And their attitude has been first class all year. They're incredibly interested in seeing the club do well and players have a positive experience and develop their own coaching. So. Without being sort of met more than halfway, it wouldn't be in the place in now. So, they've been first class to work with.
Yeah. Obviously, when I was at university and other university clubs, I have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. You know, they've got to look after finances. They need to look after, like, kit and stuff like that. So, do those roles still in place as they would be at normal university?
Yeah, and similar philosophy that the club is a student-run club.
Yep.
So, the chairman's a student, the kit sec student, feature sector is a student, which... I'm pausing Gary for deliberately, like there's some real big positives in that, and there's challenges too. So that person then changes every year, so there's got to be a really robust handover from one person to the next, and all that kind of stuff, which
is no different to a hockey club.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. If in a hockey club, I've been in it. We've all been in it. You know, fixtures just randomly appear somewhere, and you're like, did we have that conversation? And apparently, we did.
Where are the umpires? Don't know. Where are the umpires? Well, you're sort of the umpires out. Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, there's all that goes on, and then obviously then there's kit and who's using what, and obviously since we've been in here today, people have come in and picked up bits and gone out and done whatever else. It's just a normal hockey club. So the experience they're getting is just exactly how a hockey club would run. It's just got a phenomenal elite section, but with all these opportunities to be able to coach develop, which some clubs do, some clubs don't, etc. Which is pretty awesome.
Back to Stu's point about Disneyland. This isn't the real world.
No,
I'll give you a great example where a player who was one of a great player for us last year up in the Ones that. Went off and graduated last year, finished a Masters, went and played at a Premier League club, and just had a bit of a tight hamstring. So went to the coach, is there any like physio I can go speak to? He's like, yeah, no problem. A week on Thursday, he'll be down now before the session. You just jump in the back of the queue and he'll see you. She's like, oh, I'd love for it be seen the next day or the same day, and I just drop the message and we're all sorted. Like, so it's kind of getting across to the players that are here that use all the resources that are here because the real world isn't always like this. It'd be absolutely fantastic for hockey and the sport that
if it could
move that direction, but but it's not the real world.
It isn't.
Yeah, true.
You know what I mean? Yes, they are getting the physio treatment, but they're probably getting it within 24 hours, which I don't think I've ever had. So that's great, but that they've they have to adapt, and they're able to adapt and, yeah. and go into that. When it comes to intramural, then we've talked about intramural. How does that work? Obviously, that's students running it yeah. for different houses or whatever you have here at Univer. How does that run?
Yeah,
and
so,
what sort of part do you have to take in that?
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of my contract, it's not right. part of it, and I try and help a little bit, but not a great deal. With sport being such a big reason for people to come to the university to study.
Yeah.
First and foremost, university should be the most important thing. Like,
yeah.
The course and the venue is definitely the most important thing. The sport should be the, if it's important to you, the bit afterwards. With that, however, lots of people want to play hockey, want to play other sport, and we've only got a capacity of five teams. We'd love to have more, but that's just the capacity that we have. So intramural sport is mainly run for people who didn't make it into the yeah. into the teams. And like I said, the students who are in the club then have the opportunity, or to some extent probably the obligation, yeah. to make sure that that runs people who want that as well. And it's rich, it's a lot of it going on. At the end of the year, they put a dream team together and they play our ladies fives. Yeah. So it's kind of like a
we are running competition as well, there as well.
A huge
uptake this year in around the trials. So unfortunately, there's not a lot of space in the club for everyone to get in. We're running quarterly development sessions for people that didn't make it into the club, so we can sort of keep an eye on people's progress and just some training to go alongside the IM sport that we then know names when we get mm-hmm. to retrial next year. It doesn't feel like a real divide between the five teams and people playing in the mural sport, so they know people on the committee and we know them and that sort of thing. So when it comes to trials again, there's been opportunities for development as well as just playing IM sport, mm-hmm. which is good in itself, but I think it's quite a good step. Kuda, our chair, that was her idea, to be fair. Mm-hmm. But they're going pretty well. They've got a couple more of those to come.
So what does intramural sport look like? 7-a-side? 11-a-side?
Yeah.
Seven. Yeah.
Okay.
With teams, with fixtures, competition, league, all that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
And the club, the ladies section here, have sorted all of that?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. And okay. the same men and women's.
That's pretty... That for me is just massive smile on the face, but from a relationship point of view, obviously they're still playing hockey. They are still getting a competitive experience of hockey. It would be in my eyes if that was a hockey club and they were doing something, that'd be their small sided games at evening and they're getting people in who can't play weekend hockey, etc.
Different
so,
ways of playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that huge different ways of play. Yeah. Good plug. like it. Okay, and data wise, I mean, that for me, you get that, you've got X amount of people playing there. If, say, for instance, ladies fives, is that your. Mm-hmm. They become short. There's been a crisis. Brett's mm-hmm. training's nailed six of the ladies' first team out. Everyone's had to move up. Intermural, do they, because you've got contacts, do they, could they step in?
Yeah, I think they're scoped to. If the minds, I don't know the logistics and the registration bits and pieces. Yeah, yeah. At the moment, we have about 110 students at the in the club, if you like. So we do have people who won't play regularly for the 15s. So we have a slight... essentially like a rotation kind of thing, so we do make sure everyone plays. But as with any club, things happen, people are injured, ill, big parties they need to go to. that's quite a joke, tongue in cheek, what happens to. So there's always a change of movements. Again, with the ones, we're very fortunate to have a lot of international mm-hmm. players who will then go off and do camps, go play for GB in Australia and New Zealand and that kind of stuff. So there is a constant kind of unavailability, which is mm-hmm. unavoidable and actually probably quite healthy. It gives opportunities mm-hmm. for people to have different experiences and such.
And I think that some people don't understand that you've got that. They probably know that, so-and-so plays for Loughborough, but that must have a big impact, and then you've got to get people in. But having the intramural stuff, that's pretty damn cool. There was a question I was going to ask around that. So, always has intrigued me. You've got all these hockey players. A club would just put on a sixth team, a seventh team, an eighth team. What's the barrier to that here? There's obviously a barrier, because every university does it as well. So, or not every, but a lot of universities do have this intramural stuff going on. So, because they only run five sides, but technically they can run six, seven, eight. So, what's the the rationale behind that?
Again, I don't think I've got 100% answer. I think some of it is around just the capacity, so the costs, people that we feel can deliver. I guess quality for five teams. I think if we stretch ourselves too thin, we'll start getting short and bits and pieces.
Unfavourable training times and stuff, stuff like that.
Transport, I assume. Yeah, transport would be an issue, wouldn't it, as well?
And a lot of people won't drive as well because they won't bring their cars on campus and students and bits and pieces. So
I mean, I struggle to get on campus, so, so they will struggle with that.
I don't know 100% reason. So our weekend club is predominantly run by our athletic union. A lot of things have been driven by them. Yeah. But numbers-wise, we probably could increase, but there is capacity to the bits and pieces.
No, that's cool. As an outsider, everyone always goes, "We're not. Why can't they do more teams?" Because you would, wouldn't you? If that was your club, Milton Keynes or Doncaster, you'd go, "I've got all these people that are coming to this session here. I can get another team out." But there's always been a rationale behind it. So, my question now also goes to next would be that big turnover of students that you have, obviously is good, but it also brings up some challenges. But you never have any juniors. We don't have juniors. But I've noticed over time that sort of started to change. You've not got a specific junior section, but you are doing more delivery with juniors. So how's that sort of work? Because again, not many universities do that either. So, but obviously for sustainability long term, it would be such benefit to have a junior section.
And it's a huge ambition of ours, I guess. Again, some of the challenges we're trying to overcome is just personnel a little bit. So having someone there to run and drive that would be brilliant. Given that we do have a turnover, so our committee changes every single year. What you predominantly would find in a club is they have a junior lead. And they will then help drive things. Obviously our club is predominantly over 18s because students come to university after 18 and that kind of stuff. We've been trying a few things last 3 or so years, so we did some pre-prem masterclasses when the boys were in the Premier League. We then invited all schools free of charge to come, like, just do a masterclass. So we had Toby, our GB goalkeeper at the time, he then led a goalkeeper session. Ed then led a drag flick session, so anyone who wanted that experience could come in, have a little session for the match. We'd then go take them off for lunch, we'd come back, be ball patrol for the game, and then watch a Premier League game. Hopefully get that bit of inspiration about watching the GB players that were on both sides of the game, the high level of the game and that kind of stuff. It's kind of us try to nudge it along year on year. Sam's got a bit on where we're up to.
Danny Crowther, our programme coordinator and analysis lead, is actually making some good progress this year with the camps. We've put a couple of really successful days on in the autumn, and we have some dates in spring and summer. Our next ones are 30th and 31st of May, I believe. We're just trying to utilise our, like we said, our student body of coaches that are making really good progress, and they're delivering, provide opportunities for them to coach juniors as well. It's just sort of getting the word out, really. It's a reasonably newish, I mean, Brett, we did those things before my time here. It's a newish adventure still, delivering junior stuff, but, you know, I think the main thing is we need to pull all our resources together and just do a really good job at it, because we've got the facility, the coaching workforce, and the opportunity to do it. So providing there's a demand for it in the area, it's something that we'll look to continue to offer for sure.
Cool. And that's just for the junior stuff, that can be anybody anywhere. Out there, looks at the camps, and they can come and be coached by do yourselves get involved in that? So yourself and the students, so some of the students that are trying to get. I think that's, and again, that's, it's a start, isn't it? And if we're gonna get more juniors involved in the game, because ultimately around here you've got some really good clubs that could do that, but your students are getting such a fantastic experience that, you know, they may be asked once they leave here to go and deliver two juniors in the junior section if they've never done it before. That that could be a real eye-opening challenge, so to get that experience here again is great. So okay, cool, that's given us a real snapshot, I suppose, of all the different stuff that comes on at Loughborough, and it's not just around that elite. It's so I think I'd just say to the two of you here, what's, since you've been here, what's been the successes? What sort of, for you, Brett, what's been one or two successes? And I know, Andy, you've been here for a short time now, but you know, what's been the biggest success that you've sort of had? Doesn't have to be results wise either, it could be anything. So
I've had a couple of nice results recently, but I won't go on pretty hard. Generally, some of the proudest moments I look back on, so I've been in this role for 2 years now, are a few like individuals that we've been able to push, support mm-hmm. through challenging time, both on off the field and that kind of stuff, and get into a good place. But also, I guess the environment is such a nice place to be.
Yeah.
That's not that we're airy fairy and fluffy and give nice hugs or whatever. It's actually like we are striving to be better.
Yeah.
And so when we did some planning over the summer, we had a bit of a mantra like being better every day. We can talk about it a little bit, but just talk about this being accountable for like taking the opportunities, doing the best that you can do, while still being supportive. I think
mm-hmm.
we are fortunate that this is a campus-based university, so there's a fence that goes around, we call mm-hmm. it the bubble.
Mm-hmm.
There's very few reasons to leave the bubble. There's a bank, a dentist, a nursery, there's everything on campus, so there isn't many reasons to leave. But as a consequence of that, there is that family feel.
Yeah.
So we had a birthday last night at training, so one of the girls, again, not prompted me at all, one of the girls organised the cake, so when we went back to do a kind of a mock debrief after session in the pavilion next door, lights went off, happy birthday was sung, and it was kind of like, it's just nice.
Yeah.
And we went, and the session last night was a player-led session. We're at a point now where the players are really owning what we're doing, and mm-hmm. we gave them the opportunity to work out what they need to work on to prep for the weekend, and they did it, and then we planned it. I sat down and just offered a bit of a hand and some thoughts on how they plan it, and it was tough, like real competitive. Mm. We had four teams playing, the two that... two losing teams had to do a forfeit because we're all about winning at the moment mm-hmm. and really trying to be competitive, being the best. So those two went into a running forfeit. The top two went into a shuffles competition, so they'd be an overall winner, so the pressure was greater.
Yeah.
The idea that training needs to be harder than matches at the moment, so we experienced that pressure. So went out there, slogged it out, competitive, some bruises and that kind of stuff. And yet we come inside and then we say happy birthday to the girls who was 20?
Middle 19.
19.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that is genuinely my big proud thing that I'm really happy about, because we have that environment and it's getting better and better all the mm-hmm. time.
So competitive environment on the pitch, but this, it's still fun. Yeah. There's still some, you know, still some happy, smiley people.
Yeah,
it's
and,
not like
and
it's
a really interesting word because I lose enjoyment. It's not sitting as picking up words, but you get enjoyment in different ways.
Yeah.
So some of the girls there were like really tired. I was going to use a different word, but like, you're really tired after the session, and that's their enjoyment. They got that kick because they just worked their ass off for that period of time, and they come back and enjoy that positive, supportive environment. And it's tough because, again, we're going back to the players we have. I mean, our second team minute is just insanely
good.
Yeah,
they're a good group.
And a lot of those girls have played in the National League last year, and more than good have played in the National League this year. So how do you keep that enjoyable, supportive environment when you've got girls who are desperately pushing to play in that performance environment and are more than capable to do that?
Yeah.
And it's a balance, but... yeah, I think that's one of our successes that we're really pushing hard at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about yourself, Andy?
Just thinking there, a couple of them would be around the transition from development to performance. So just the terminology around development is something new this year at Loughborough. It would be, it's just moving away from this idea of a ones and a twos, I suppose, and how people move pretty seamlessly between the groups. So 1 week, you're part of the development group, and then there's a couple of injuries and you're called up to perform. So those players generally, well, very consistently have always gone up and performed very well, either training and matches. So, you know, I think having an extra layer that sits below performance and things are done in a similar, not identical, but a similar way with good quality, that players are able to move seamless between the two. And obviously I sit across both as well. So that's something reasonably new this year.
Yeah, so I guess actually had a good conversation with Jimmy Carnane at Surbiton, and I guess hearing about how they do things on there. Obviously, they're doing a brilliant job within clubland, junior land, and all that kind of stuff, so it's interesting to hear how they did it. And you mentioned earlier about the churn of people, so our environment looks and feels different every single year because of the personnel that are in it, both staffing but also players ultimately as well. And because we have such a great group of players and people at the university at the moment, the structure that we're working to, the model we're working to, I don't think it was optimised. So we're now supporting 8 more people than we ever have. So we're at 38 people, I think, who are like...
If you include the wider group, it's
there. Yeah, getting some sort of like performance support. And we've just moved to a model where there will always be 20 outfield players in our performance training squad. So A, numbers are consistent, so that's great from a planning perspective, so selfishly it makes my life a bit easier, but also it gives opportunity for people to be exposed to that environment. And it'd be okay, let's say we're 8 teams, we need to fill 2 spaces, we may just put the next best 2 players up, or we think of playing the best at the moment, or equally might be working on some crucial moment defensive stuff. So actually, just pull two defenders up who need to work on that, or some long distribution. So actually, these are the two players that will really benefit from that, and vice versa. We can be really selective over.
Yeah, their conversation that we have, we're quite flexible with that.
Yeah.
To program planning. It's been.
It's just been out. Yeah. It's probably just been able to be flexible. Yeah. You know, we've got reasonably good structures at the moment. We can be flexible around that call up stuff, and just be honest with players why. Yeah. If it's actually selection contention for the first team, so you could move up, or it could be this is a good session that I focus on some of your work on, so you can come and do that. And it's we've done it for different reasons, haven't we? So
that's no different to what a club could do. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? That definitely doesn't just link to.
Yeah.
Loughborough University. Now that is definitely a hockey club out in the community. Could definitely think around stuff like that to be able to support their players.
Yeah, from what I'm speaking to, the conversation with Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's pretty cool. Challenges then. So you've been here. There's obviously been some hurdles. Some hurdles are easier to go over than others. And the barriers are generally what hockey clubs, hockey people, hockey coaches, volunteers, anything like that, throw up and go, this is a barrier. And we've struggled to overcome those little barriers. Yeah. And this is generally one of the reasons why I created the podcast, was just to share that we've had these barriers and we've overcome them. Now, this is a slightly different world, but again, it might just throw something out there where a person goes, oh, yeah, didn't know. So what sort of barriers have you sort of faced since you've been here? I'm not asking for controversy or anything here, Brett.
Classic stuff around pitch times.
Yeah.
I suppose in the development group, we're a little bit early on. So 5 is when they start, which can be a lot of people's actually finish at 5. So it's quite tight.
Or 6.
Yeah, sometimes people do. I miss the whole thing. It's just one of those things. But on one of the days. But making sure those sessions, when they get the picture, are meaningful, and how we structure the first part of the session. So can't guarantee everyone's going to be there at 10 to 5.
Yeah.
So what was the first 25 minute session look like?
Yeah.
Sort of trying this thing around just arrival games rather than your student led warm up.
Yeah.
And I know that'll be music to your ears, Gary, around sort of thing. But have some games going, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And actually that really works. You know, they get physically ready to play. So they've had some touches on the ball, they're probably in a better position, and actually we're into the session a lot smoother. So that's one way of overcoming it. And we're quite flexible with each other, so the development goes into performance. It's like there's a 6 to 6:15 transition. Mm-hmm. But if we desperately need to do some penalty corners, or there's something at the end, Brett's like, oh, we can have a D. And it's pretty easy, we just talk to each other.
Yeah.
So there's no conflict as such, no, it's just being flexible all the time. So like tonight we need to do this, someone's going to be late, they're going to be here for this bit, and for that reason, can I have an extra 10 minutes of that D before I jump across to performance, and we'll generally work something out.
Mm. Oh, we've got a secret location that we like to go to too.
Yeah, we have these conversations in the back cave.
So for those that are native to Loughborough, spend a bit of time there, probably know what coffee shop we're referring to, but
yeah, I've only ever seen you tweet pictures around this coffee shop, so you obviously like a coffee, Andrew, from what I've
seen.
One
of us is a brand ambassador.
Excellent. Well, okay, so for me there, club world communication again, it's that the coaches talk to each other, we've got this, can we use a D? I'm not sure how many times that conversation happens, certainly in a lot of clubs that I deal with, you know, even between men's and ladies sections, ladies and junior sections, senior and junior sections, that type of communication sometimes can be lost.
Yeah.
And I think just having that communication, I'm not saying every club can go to a coffee shop, be a brand ambassador and do whatever else they want.
They can dream.
Yeah.
it's utopian in a way, because we spend a lot of time on the phone.
Yeah.
It'd be my most dialed in the recent months with Brett. So we can have those conversations and plan ahead.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're getting the most out of the environment at the moment. Like, we couldn't, when we were doing this podcast, we sat down around what's next and the challenges and what we could do to move it forward. And probably most of it's around just the stuff off the pitch, because on the pitch, without short of having more pitches and more coaches, I don't know what much more we could be doing. Like, you drop into the development stuff now and again and deliver as a point of difference.
Mm-hmm.
I sit in performance all the time as an assistant coach, and sort of in terms of using our resources on the pitch, we couldn't really be doing much more.
No.
Short of having more pitches and more coaches and more time. But,
so just to kind of layer onto that, so the reason why I want to bring Andy in, not just because of his coffee obsession, I can join together on, he comes in not just for the sessions, he comes in for other things as well. And I think challenging each other is really key, and trying to push each other, but also going into the level of detail that we do in terms of our planning. And I am full time in this role, and there's not many other full time roles of this nature.
Mm-hmm.
And I just feel like there's pressure and obligation to deliver the quality that we're delivering on. To like, what is an individual going to get out of this session? How are we going to stretch them? Who needs a little bit more support? And kind of pushing it through that way.
That's good. No, it's been well thought of, hasn't it? So I mean, challenges are always, for me, they're never going to go away. That we'll find a resolve to one challenge, and then we're going to get another. So I like what you're doing. It was music to my ears with the warm up stuff. You're right. And I think that's something that, again, clubs could easily instill, is the fact of, we just go straight into some mini game situations, 4-on-4. How's that work? 4-on-4, 5-on-5.
Yeah. A lot of 2v2v2. Some 4-on-4 with the mini goals. Going to toy around some goal scoring practices when the keepers. So we've got one keeper that's a bit earlier than the other. So we can do a small game in front of them, but they get warmed up as well. So. Yeah, it's a change in structure, because a lot of these girls will have come from environments which are more traditional around warm-ups.
Mm-hmm.
So if they played hockey at school, they're out at the same time, they'll warm up. Come through age group sides where that's happened and stuff like that. So it's just sort of being flexible. Like, some cycle here and they're here for 4:50, and some are coming out of a lecture hall, they're here at 5:05. They need to get similar session experiences.
Which is no different to a club when you put a session on at 7 o'clock and somebody's finished work at 6:30 and it's an hour to get there, so I'm going to get there for 7:30, I'm a half an hour in. Or you're going to get somebody there that's eager, keen at 2:15, and somebody there at 5:05. It's just forever, and you end up losing that first 15, 20 minutes, which I think is pretty wicked that you're managing to do that. So what about yourself, Brett? What challenges have you had to overcome since you've been here?
Yeah, I guess part of the nature of the university sport programme is we play on the university's on a Wednesday, on a Wednesday, and then playing the club league on a Saturday, so it is just relentless.
Yeah.
So we talk a lot about managing load and keeping players fit and healthy, but also mentally kind of in the right zone, which has certain challenges, which we may come to in a second. But around selection is a really big one for me.
Yeah.
I guess probably didn't really, appreciate how constant it is. And with any club, you've got people that are going to be on the cusp between two teams, and that's a really challenging place to be. So we put a few things in place right when I started, around just what do we want that culture, what do we want the environment to feel like. So when we do selection, and this was a big open discussion we had right at the beginning, when we literally one of the first few weeks of us getting together, like, what do we want selection to be like? When is it out? Does it an email? Is it WhatsApp? Is it a printed piece of paper you stick on the wall? Is it in front of everyone? Is it on your own? If you're not selected for 1 week and you were the week before, is that a phone call for me? Is it a one-to-one? How do you want it as a group of players? How are we going to deliver on that? And that actually was really powerful, because everyone had their chance to say, and people had different views, which is life. But then we said, okay, well, this is what the majority, are we all happy with this, we're buying in, okay, great, well, this is now how we're going to do it. And that made life a little bit easier. And again, the message, and it's really difficult because you can have some really tricky conversations, but just being open and honest and saying exactly where it is. So let's say a player isn't selected, someone else is outperforming them, you tell them, okay, this is the reason why, and importantly, this is where we think you need to get better and improve on, and these are the opportunities you're going to have to do that. And that's made a big difference. It's still challenging, because people want to play in the highest level and they're ambitious, and that's why they're here.
But if you've set out your standards, you've set out your culture, your values, whatever that might be, and it's been agreed, everyone sat down and discussed it, majority, you've gone with it, at least everybody knows.
And the best praise you're going to get on that is actually, it's fair, maybe it's consistent, which not great words, but in terms of that, they fit. But and I hope most players that we work with know that Andy and I genuinely really care. We've been there as players, we've had all the same emotions and feelings that the players will be feeling. And actually, the fact that we do care so much means we can be really empathetic with it, but also quite direct and honest. And sometimes actually the really direct and honest feedback does show that you care the most.
No, I think that's
it's tricky,
but there's some really good challenges there that you've had to try and overcome, and but you've put things in place and they've been managed. And I think that's, again, a word that I would use quite a lot, is the fact of it's all right saying we're going to do this, but then to manage that situation.
And again, there's a few fail-safes in that. So we have a couple of leadership groups. So we have, within the first team, a captain and vice-captain, and we meet as a selection panel, and Andy's in that quite often as well. We have a goalie coach in that too. So I get things wrong, Gary, and sometimes I'm aware of them and sometimes I'm not aware of them. I'd rather be aware of the mistakes that I make more often. So having that panel helps. We also have what we've called the voices. So they got voted at the beginning of the year, and they're just representatives of our performance squad. So people that they feel trust in, that they can then give their views, and we meet once a month. We also have a first year representative within that group as well. So they're then being heard at the same time.
They planned last night.
So the voices planned the session last night based on what the players thought they needed. Which, interesting, Gary, was a lot of drill based practices, but we won't go into that.
You've just sworn on my podcast.
None of those voices are actually in the coach development bracket at the moment, so they don't know any better yet.
There's an education piece we're working towards. But all the players came out saying, "Yeah, it's brilliant, I really enjoyed that. Okay, I got that kick that I needed." And ultimately, the point of training is to make sure you go into the weekend.
One of the
small side of games at the end were excellent.
Oh, they were brilliant.
They were
fun.
Yeah,
a lot of controversy on points, as you would imagine.
Oh wow!
And the points weren't super complicated. There's one point for a few things that we're trying to do, but a few
clickers. Rusty, we chuffed a bit now when I'm clickers.
Exactly.
I thought the human factor would be fine, but
no. They're not. Okay, something that we haven't touched on is cross sport communication, and it happens at some hockey clubs where they. And I've tried to push this, where hockey club's got a rugby club on site, may have a football club on site, squash club. Actually, coaches come together and have discussions about things and watch each other to give some support. I know that more clubs are trying that, but that happens here a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah. So I beat myself up over this because I do it regularly. It's on one of many spreadsheets that I have, notes that I have, to do it as often as possibly can. And he was to meet a coach for coffee. So yesterday, actually, I met the basketball coach here, Mark Jarman, who's fantastically good. Like, successful with his program in terms of results, but the culture he's creating, it feels like a culture I would love to be in.
Yeah.
So again, supported, challenged, loved, and all this kind of stuff. It's a really great environment. I just want to speak to him about attacking a circle, attacking the D, and what his principles are around it, and how he sees that world, and is there a crossover with hockey and all bits and pieces. But yeah, the opportunity to, I mean, I live in a performance sport office, so I look to my right, I've got Sarah Hunter, who's the most GB England rugby player, next to her is an ex senior coach, and I look around the room and there's Olympians and there's high level coaches that you get into conversation in the office, or you make it more formal and you say, right, can I sit in one of your meetings and listen to what you're doing?
The cool thing is the coach mentoring, isn't it?
So you get to sign
the coach mentor of mine, Reese Edwards, the ladies rugby coach. So I've had a few one-on-ones with him, been to their training a couple of times, and the learning is great, the opportunities are there. But it's one of those things, you want to block out time for it, and there's only so many hours in the day. You want to do things here and other places as well. But that's been fantastic to have.
Do students get to do that within their role? So, like, does a student fixture secretary or something like that get to?
I don't think they currently do, but I think that could be organised through the CBA potentially.
Yeah. That's definitely what, for me, as a in the world of development, I want to try and get to see more, because I love the coach stuff, obviously. But for me, getting them to share, I do this in my fixed secretary role, and they go, but I use this, and you never know what program you might come across, like how they're actually communicating with different people. Has been an eye opener, and that I won't get to know the effect of that, because a couple of clubs or a couple of individuals that I know are kind of working on that now for the next 18 months. But I think personally, I don't know why it just stops at the coach. Because some stuff in other sports is good, some stuff is not so good. But actually, if you're sharing that, it lifts the standards of everybody's admin, volunteer base, or anything, whatever.
And they do have an introduction at the beginning of the year and induction, that kind of stuff. But there's definitely scope to revisit it, a Christmas kind of review or catch up or bits and pieces. And it'd probably be given where we are on this campus base, it's probably an easy opportunity to do it. You can see someone to drive, I would say. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. Is it's a lot easier here than it is in a sports club somewhere. I mean, sports club, yes, they're probably all on site or near that.
But you're not here every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, the future. Last little bit. What's the future? Oof. What's the future hold for the two of you, the ladies club, the sport itself here? Where do we see that sort of going? What's the
deep question?
We had a chat about over a coffee, didn't we?
It's our second special location.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Billy Athlete Centre gets behind us.
Oh, very nice.
Very nice price point as well.
More of a work-based venue. You can get more done there, I think.
I'm trying to say the secret location don't do much work. This is not good on a podcast, Andy.
We work hard. the future. So I said to you, that's a really good question, because then how often have we spoke about that? And it'd probably not that much. We tend to be quite in the present, but it's around the more quality contacts with all the support. So what we currently offer.
He's got a whole document of
2019-20 season.
So around the sports psych stuff, which is new.
Really excited about that.
That's a good project. The new stuff around the S&C support been extended to more players in the development group. That's new. So it's just adding layers and quality contact time and opportunities for to benefit more people. Yeah. I suppose the coach development stuff's reasonably new. How do we make that better?
Yeah.
How can we get more support around that, get more learning into that, and more opportunities around that? You know, it's just growing the quality of what we do. I think when you're doing a lot, it's easy to say, oh, this is lovely, and stand back and admire, but
there's still things to
add on, for sure.
Listening to it, there's actually more within this university hockey club than most people would realise. The stuff that you've got to liaise with, you've got to communicate with, but also, you know, the stuff lower down and how big that is and that sort of stuff, that how that feeds in, and or how you're trying to link intramural to development, development to the elite. There is a bigger picture here. And the future is possibly massive. But it's good that you're starting to put that in. Because in club world, that'd be your development plan, wouldn't it? Like your development plan of how we're going to get to here in the next 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, whatever that might be.
We said right at the top about, I still do feel we're scratching the surface. Last couple of years, the university have had a real push on utilising placement students and interns. So the university as a whole are really keen on four-year degrees. So in your third, you then go and work in industry and you get some really good experience. I guess as a side note, me personally, I know it's a difference with quite a lot of people who come back after that year in industry and having to do a 9-to-5 and the stress of the real world and that kind of stuff, and they come back in the fourth year. Right, I'm going to get into the library at 9, I'm going to my lectures, finish at 5, have the evenings to myself, which can last a few weeks and then can then merge back. But it is a great experience. The university want to try and put on opportunities to have those placements here. So if I have an ambition to be a performance analyst for an elite team in the future, well, why can't I get a year's experience with the hockey program, with the rugby program, with the football program? So as a program and leading the hockey program, we're getting the benefit of that. So we've got a girl called Gabriella working with us at the moment, who is brilliant. Like, she's so proactive, she's getting better all the time, she's doing some excellent things. So her experience of this year is going to grow and take into the future. We're then benefit from that as well. Harry, who Andy mentioned a second ago, who's leading our new S&C program that we're bringing in, he's now got an opportunity to work with 8 athletes, be in the gym with them, lead individual programs, do it all himself kind of thing. So definitely echo what Andy's saying. How do we just maximise the quality of what we're producing? And how do we maximise what we're doing? So give example, GPS. So fortunately, we've got a handful of GPS units that we use on the players. So we know what like the demands of the game are. So we know how much a different player would run to a forward midfielder defender. That's fantastic in itself. We can then say, right, this is brilliant. But actually, how do we use that? So we now know that terrain needs to mimic that game. We need to get this much high speed running in the training session because that's going to prepare them for the games. We've done a really cool project recently working out what is the worst case scenario for 5 minutes in terms of sprinting and like the hardest work they'll do, the biggest intensity. So at training before Christmas, we'd run 3 5-minute blocks at that intensity. So when it comes to game day, they've had it and they've done it. And we'll do it in different different formats. We went with three teams. So one would do running, which is very prescribed, this many metres in this much time. Mm-hmm. So we're getting it as close as possible. And then the other two would play a game. So we're doing the high speed running within a decision making kind of context. And a really fun one we did, well, fun in my head, it was a 3v1. So ideally 3v1, you should be able to get past the defender, mm-hmm. but putting the constraint on that if the defender touches, there's a turnover. If you don't get a shot, you get minus points. A shot goal, you get minus points. So yeah, it was 3v1, but actually you're doing it at high speed. It's only five players in each of the teams. So when the 3v1's gone, you've got to get back to the beginning of your queue because the next guy's going to go, because they've only got two. So
last attack and touch, it defends.
Yeah, the last attack and touch. So it's like,
it's transition element. There's a lot of high speed running.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now we can go away and do the analysis again. So what do those 5 minutes periods look like now? Mm-hmm. Is the intensity going up? With the idea being that if we can play at that higher intensity, we can defend better and get behind the ball, so harder to score against. And only see 5 goals in the National League this year because they're tripping. Or can we get more people like ahead of the ball, and can we have more players scoring? Mm-hmm. And then we can then look at it, okay, for those 5 minute periods where the intensity is really high, are we winning those actions more? So are we scoring? Are we hopefully not conceding? Are we getting more shots? Are we not conceding shots? So those 5 minute worst case scenarios, we're winning those and we're getting better. So we're using the GPS to drive that information at training, trying to be really specific. But there's avenues around that that we can push more.
Mm.
So it's all great having the toys and all the shiny stuff, but how are we actually using them to maximise what we're doing?
Which is great. So, you know, the elite side of the game here is definitely going to continue to grow. Well, have you got any plans for your development stuff at the moment? Obviously, I know you said about coach development and stuff like that. Yeah.
The second team have done some GPS stuff, and we're trying to get a couple more games where they've done two so far. Trying to get two or three more would be great, just to sort of benchmark the tempo of the game in their leagues. Mm-hmm. And actually, it'd be interesting to see players that have played ones and twos playing their different games. So it's adding layers of support to the around that. The SNC project's really good that Harry's leading. That's going to benefit the development program. In terms of the future of that, I suppose the biggest change I'd like to make, or shift we're trying to subtly provoke at the moment, is how are the student coaches going to use and deploy me in some sessions. Mm-hmm. So take a bit of the planning element away from me. We're very well set now with the way of a way of working, but give those guys opportunities to plan, lead, and think, right, Andy, you're here tonight. Really give them complete ownership when, you know, in opportunities to take full accountability for it. So that's going to happen, and we'll review that, and that'll hopefully drive us to a better place next year. We know what the blend will look like with a year to look back on.
Mm. Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, you know, it's been fascinating listening to how university world works for you. If just a few takeaways for me, some takeouts, is communication's key, just like it would be in any hockey club, possibly more, but actually your communication between the two of you to make this work is, you know, is maximized, which is, that's good. And a hockey club probably could take that out for the moment. It's definitely take out, we probably could communicate with each other better.
We also communicate more, and even if it's a there is no decision. We've not changed anything. Actually, just saying that sometimes is powerful.
But you also communicate really well, by the sounds of it, to your members, you know, to your players, to the guys that actually run the club.
Yeah, WhatsApp's a great thing.
Yeah. Number two for me was culture, values. You've set that out. You've got buy-in, and it makes your processes easier, whether that is selection, whatever that might be. But having that allows that, and again, a hockey club can definitely take that out for sure. And then the third thing was just how you're dealing with timings of sessions, pitch space, because again, hockey clubs have to deal with there might be a football session on before, another session before them. They get very limited time to set up. But actually, what you've put on is some cool little warm up games to allow that to happen, to sort of counteract the problems that you have with latecomers, people that are arriving early and getting the most out of sessions. So that was the three big things for me. I'm sure listeners will have more to take out of it, but it's been fascinating. So thank you very much for your time, gents.
Thank you, Gary.